Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of UFOs and the Paranormal. I'm your host, Preston Bennett, and each week we bring you exciting new guests to talk about various aspects of UFOs and the paranormal. And we recently did switch times. We're now on Sunday, so I hope you're all able to find me. But this is a great new time, I think, and I'm really excited about it, and I've got an exciting new guest tonight who's got some very, very interesting things to share and has been researching this for quite some time, actually. His name is Buddy Piper. That's Buddy Piper, P-I-P-E-R. And he has been researching the subjects of UFOs and the paranormal in many different aspects, actually. But tonight what we're going to be talking about is Maitreya, or Maitreya, I believe is how you pronounce it. If you haven't heard of Maitreya, well, you will tonight. Apparently, if I'm correct, he's an enlightened master, and his appearance has been heralded or prophesized by some very interesting events that are taking place in our skies. And so there's some really interesting evidence to support this story, and we're going to learn all about Space Brothers and Maitreya and the star of Maitreya and what this means for our world today, the economic and social and political and spiritual crises that we are having. So I want you all to give a nice warm welcome to our guest, Buddy Piper. Buddy, thank you so much for coming onto the show.
Well, thank you. It's a real privilege to find people who have the courage to talk about the things that most people are afraid to talk about. And when we talk about the UFOs and the paranormal, that's a part of our universe that we can see sometimes, and but we're afraid to talk about. And we shouldn't live in fear, because fear is the absence of love. So I need love, and that's why I keep talking about these kinds of things. And I know you people are brave to be doing this kind of talk, and Maitreya's whole wish is that we just recognize that all of us with our shortcomings are also our solution once we get rid of fear and start loving each other. And
exactly.
That sounds good to me. After 20 years of volunteering time on over 1,000 talk shows and traveling to 100 cities telling the poor people to get out of the stock market because it was going to crash, I've been telling that for 20 years and nobody believed me, but it's okay. I don't blame them. It's happening, and that's the start of the greatest change towards good in human history, and I'll try to impart what little I know about it after 20 years of studying it. If you ask me any questions, or if you can tell me a lot of things I need to learn, so I know that you people have courage. Take care.
All right. Well, I agree with you. I think love is the most powerful force in the universe, and we need more of it here on Earth right now.
Well, we all have the capacity. It's just a case we just don't recognize what could be more powerful than loving every human being. It finally makes us all one.
Right, it would change the earth overnight. So how did you get involved in these kinds of subjects? I mean, where does your story start?
Well, I apologize for being a little long-winded, so you just cut me off any time. My story starts from the fact that I grew up in Kansas, western Kansas, out near Dodge City, which is really a real city, sort of. And I lived in the country. My folks weren't farmers, and my folks never went to churches, temples, mosques, or synagogues because they just loved everybody. That saved time, and they passed that on to my sister and me, that if we didn't love everybody, then we're missing out on the most exciting thing we can do on this planet, is to recognize that creation is about love. And so I grew up that way, and in the process I didn't have too many friends. I was very, very shy, and I used to sit down and listen to the radio a lot. I'm 85 years old right now, and I've never had a headache. I've given a lot of headaches because I talk about the fact that we're all magnificent. It wouldn't be wonderful if we acted like it to ourselves, starting with ourselves and everybody else, because I don't think there's a time in history that love is needed more than right now, and it doesn't cost a penny.
Right.
So I don't know where to go from there. I could talk for an hour, but if you have any questions that come up in anything I say, why? Not that I know the answers, but I would certainly respond, because that's partly what we're a small group of us around the world. There are about 4,000 people been doing this for the past 20 years, and we don't know all the answers. We keep trying to learn them, but we like to go from people where they are, who've had experience and have the imagination that you people have to even call your show what you do, because I think that's a great way for people to stretch their minds a little bit. Lots of times we wait for somebody else to tell us what to think, and of course that gets us fairly unwise, and also doesn't solve too many problems, because one or two people can't solve it. We all have to do the work.
Right. Well, I totally agree with you.
Can't quite hear you. This might be my telephone. I have a very inexpensive telephone. Can you hear me?
I can hear you fine, yeah.
I'm picking up now. I have to keep moving back and forth on my telephone. I bought a $29 telephone. I should have bought a $30 one, but but I only had $29. Yeah, let me see if I can get to the sound right. Can you hear me better now? Hello?
Yeah, I can hear you. You know, the other way was actually a little better, but...
All right, I'll stay with this until it gets quiet, and then I'll move over to my other part of my $29. How's that?
Sounds good.
I apologize for my sense of humor. I used to be an actor on the Red Skelton Show for years.
Is that right?
Yeah, Red was... I kept hearing him say, when I lived out in Kansas, I listened to him each week, I kept hearing him say, good night, Uncle Tub Skelton out in Indiana. And I thought, well, that's a strange name. But as I got older, I was very, very young when I first heard him. By the time I got to be about 8 or 9, 10 years old, I began to understand that my grandmother on my father's side was named Skelton. And she kept, every once in a while, she'd say, I wonder how old Uncle Tub is out there. I hear he's in Indiana. And I think my Uncle Tub probably enjoyed wine and alcohol a little bit more than he should, and he got lost. And but I didn't know that at the time. So when I'd hear Skelton say that, I said, I wonder if we're related in any way. And that was just a wish and guess of mine when I was that young, very many, many years ago. So...
Well, let me ask you this. What do you think about the enlightened masters and Maitreya, and who exactly is Maitreya?
Yeah, well, you know, his name is what I enjoy hearing you say, because I've been with it 20 years and still occasionally don't say his name exactly the way he says it. It's Maitreya, but I don't think he cares what we call him. He's that kind of person. What is it you wanted precisely to know?
Well, just, you know, who he is, and
okay.
There's a star apparently that's appearing in the sky, but people...
Yes, you know, what's very fortunate is California is situated in an amazing place, because even the San Fernando Valley alone, if you count the population here, it's the fifth largest city in the United States population-wise.
So right?
We've,
wow.
And which a lot of us don't recognize. I've lived here always since I left Kansas. I wanted to be living either in New York or L.A., because I had decided that I wanted to be in show business, and those are the two places that most of the show business comes out of in the entire world. Mostly it starts here in Los Angeles, because everybody can find a place to hide in L.A. and be who they want to be, which I like. And you're bound to have some wild ideas there. And So what happens here is we come up with ideas, and New York, which is always an expensive place to live, they make money out of our ideas. But it's okay, because we have fun of creating more ideas. So I bumped into Maitreya because I heard that there was somebody on the planet that really... cared about us, and his job was to let us know that somehow we have to make the world better. We don't have to, but the point is that we can do it. And Maitreya is a person who
You will hear him in time as the person starts speaking about the, you talked about this star. I watch it every night here in L.A., and it's generally, when there's a full moon, generally if you look from the full moon around, just keep spreading out your vision right or left from that, generally you see that star. It's like a beautiful flower bursting in the open, but it's there, and sometimes it moves rapidly, and sometimes it doesn't, but in 2 or 3 hours it disappears, because it's, there are 4 of those around the world, and if I tell you, because you people might believe me, and I'm not asking anybody to believe me, that because your minds are wide open to even have this subject, there are 4 stars like that around the planet, and they really are unbelievable. I don't know if you remember the story. Now, this is a religious thing, which I'm not against or for religions, as long as they love everybody. If they don't love everybody, I hope they're not. I hope they want to love people. But the planets all are occupied. We don't know that. And the other thing we don't know is that we're all 18.5 million years old. There's no way to die permanently. And you don't have to believe anything I say today. But just leave your minds open if you can stand to keep listening, because eventually, what I'm telling you, if you have a pen or pencil, as we go along today, I will give you a few numbers to write down. And long after I've been on with all of you wonderful people, with you people and the people who listen to you, you'll be able to check those numbers when it brings your attention to it, and you will know more than 95% of the people on the planet what's going to happen. I'm going to wait a little bit as we go, and then I'm going to ask if it's okay if I to give people some numbers to call in the future when we're not on any longer. Okay?
Yeah, that's definitely okay.
Okay, I don't know what I was talking about. I got lost, but ask me what you want to, and it'll bring me back or take me someplace, or I'll listen to you because I learn from everybody.
Well, we were talking about Maitreya and how you
how found him. Yeah. Well, when I found out when I was a little boy that my grandmother was named Skelton before she married my grandfather, Piper, or great-grandfather, whatever. You know, relatives are hard for me to have in tune. Everybody knows but me. I consider everybody my relative, and fortunately for them, they don't consider me their relative if I upset them. So I honor their feelings. Red Skelton used to say goodnight, Uncle Tubbs Skelton, out in Indiana, and I thought, my gosh, after I kept going, your grandmother used to say Uncle Tubbs. And so I wrote him when I got ready to graduate from high school out in western Kansas, which is about 14 miles south of Dodge City. And I said, Dear Red, I thought, you know, I was so naive. I said, Dear Red, I think I want to be an actor, because I was fooled into reading for a part one time, and I was so shy that I just cringed because people had tricked me into reading for it. They said, you like things, why don't you come in and watch us at the 4-H pub, try out for a play here. And I got a big joy out of watching, but all of a sudden they came in a group to me and said, now it's your turn to read. And I was so shy, I almost perished at that time. And I got up and started reading because I figured they wouldn't leave me alone until I did. And I thought, oh, I'd get that over with in a hurry. And they started laughing at everything I said. And I thought, oh, my gosh, I was so lousy. They're laughing at what I'm reading. And I said, no, this is a comedy. And, of course, you watch and hear dramas all the time and comedies. And you just didn't recognize that laughter comes naturally because you're doing a job of making people laugh. I said, oh, well, I about passed out. I was faint and worried. But when it was over, I came to the conclusion, something that most people in show business don't really realize, that most people in show business who are actors because they have to be somebody else to feel completely comfortable. So they're very, very shy, generally. And the problem is that if you're... if you never get a job, then you end up being a pretty good waiter because you always have a get a job as a waiter, and you can go back to the job if you've got one part sometime along the line. But I was a lousy waiter, so I couldn't even do that. So I decided I better be pretty good at comedy because I like comedy. It always cheers me up to hear other people make people laugh, you know. So I wrote a letter to Red Skelton and said, "Dear Red," I said, "I apologize for writing to you, but I just wonder if maybe we're related. My grandmother was a Skelton lady, and she talks about Uncle Tub Skelton out in Indiana. And I said, P.S., I think I'm going to be in show business. My folks are absolutely very, very poor. And they don't go to any church, temple, mosque, or synagogue, but everybody loves them because they love everybody in the community. And most people don't love a lot of people that much. So they don't have to defend themselves anyway for not going to a religious place to get to where they love people. They already do it." And I said, if I say something to you that you don't want to answer, why tell me? But I'm wondering if we are related, and my folks are poor, and they can't send me to New York or L.A. if I want to be an actor. What do you suggest I do? And I thought he'd get my letter. Well, he had about 5,000 letters a week coming in. I didn't know that. But a week from that time, I got a telephone call from a lady, so cheerful lady, and she says, "Buddy," I said, "Yeah." I said, "Who's this?" She said, "This is Edna Skelton. I'm Red Skelton's wife." "And he told me to call you." And I said, "Well, thank you." I said, I'm so pleased that you called. Is he there?" She said, "Yes, but he won't talk to you." I said, "Won't talk to me?" I said, "No." She says, "He was poor for so long. His father was a one-night stand, so he never, ever saw his father." And they said, "The other side of it is that his mother worked three jobs a day to raise him, so he never saw his mother very often, except in the morning or evening as she went to work. And so he just doesn't know. When he sees people, although he's famous, he wants them to like him. Not because he's famous, but because he needs the love of people. And so he can't see you. So everything I talk to you about, he will have told me already, which he has, and he will tell me more. You'll probably hear him in the background. But until he meets you sometime, if he ever does, why, it'll probably be he won't talk to you until he gets real sure that people really like him for who he is, not because he's getting to be a rich man, because he's uncomfortable even with being rich himself." So I said, "Okay, I understand all that." He says to you that if you want to be an actor and you don't have any money and can't get to New York or L.A., which he agrees with you are the places to go because most of the ideas are created in California, and the New Yorkers take it and make a fortune out of them. But he says, if you understand that, he says, why, there's nothing in the world can stop you from being an actor if you're supposed to be one, because love and life are the same thing when we get through being afraid. He says, if you're afraid, you can't experience the love with which you were created. But if you are not afraid, then you love. And that's what life's about. If one person on the planet is hungry tonight, all of us have work to do, because there are only three words that express God, whether you're religious or not, and that is God is love. And if you've changed that, like saying that God's going to burn you in hell or something, well, that's quite an insult to a God that is love. So that you'll find out in time is not true. But my job is not to judge anybody. My job is just to tell you that if you love, why, you've got a good start on life. And he said, if you go to a small college, is there a college near you? Well, when you graduate, and I said, yeah, there's one in 14 miles north in Dodge City. He said, well, maybe that's the place you should be. And he said, there's nothing to stop you. You'll get to East Coast or West Coast if you're supposed to. So I said, oh, well, thank you. And the other thing he says, make sure that whatever you do in life, that you love everybody you meet, because that is what life's about. and that's what kept me going. And I even love my plants. I love everything new, and that keeps me healthy. So I thought I got a real kick out of that, you know.
Right.
And so from that thing, I went up to Dodge City. I got me a job as a waiter in a restaurant, which gave me a little money to pay my tuition. In those years, I could go to college for a year for about $50, and I made $50 in my work, and I got some food to eat. And then I found there was a very rich lady in town who was blind, and she ran a little ad which somebody told me about, because I said, I got to find a place to live. I live in my car, but I don't have a car. I only have a bicycle. And so somebody said, well, there's a lady that just advertised saying she'd like to have somebody live with her. She'd give them a room free if they were going to college up here, because a lot of people come in here from small towns around. And if they just play one game of cards with her a week, because she loved to play cards. Even though she can't see, she had a way of figuring out how to play cards by banging on the table and stuff. And she said she could teach you how to play. So I got a place to live with her. And that got me in the position that every night I'd take a ride on my bicycle. And along came a young lady who I discovered was going to college the first year, too. And she was riding her bicycle. She did that, too. And she was so smart. So we would ride and talk sometimes almost till morning, because I was so thrilled to have somebody who had a bicycle. And that was her life. And one time we passed along the road there, we passed a house that up above as we rode, where a lady, I see, would be there almost till morning every night reading and sitting out there with a light on her. And she looked like she was about 85 to 90 years old. And I asked the girl, do you know who that is? She said, yes, that's the drama teacher. When you get started, that's who will be in charge of you. I said, holy smoke. So I said, she said, I got to go back home for a minute tonight, and thanks for riding with me. I went back, and as soon as I knew the girl had gone on, I went back up to where the lady was still up on the balcony up there. And I climbed up the balcony, and I looked over at her, and I said, Juliet, this is Romeo. She screamed with laughter. She says, who are you? I said, well, I'm my name's Buddy Piper. You wouldn't know me, but I'm going to be in your group up here learning to act, and I understand you're a great teacher. She says, yeah, come up over the balcony here. Let's talk. We talked. It was daylight. And so I'm just telling you a lot of stuff here. I could go on forever. I'll stop for a while just to tell you if maybe I've answered your question, whatever it was.
Well, no, it's interesting. It's leading all on, so.
See, if you have any questions that you want to ask me, I can talk forever. But I got in that play up there. She cast me in a play, that lady. I was a young man. When I was in college, I was only 17 years old, because in my small town where I went to school, out in Bloom, Kansas, 14 miles south of Dodge, they didn't have a second grade, so they just put me in the third grade, and that got me out of high school quickly. I graduated at 17. And so anyway, there was supposed to be a young man who walked around carrying a hat box in a play called, gosh, I just dropped it out of my mind. I'll think of it as we go along here. But it was a famous play at that time in 19, I was 17 on top of being born in 24. I was about 18 years old, 17, 18 years old then. Anyway, what was I telling you?
You're talking about how you climbed up the balcony.
She cast me in the play, and it was a guy who carried this hat box around, and he actually had cut off somebody's head, but he was so charming that everybody liked him. And he just kept carrying that around. Well, out in the audience that night, I looked out of the curtain, and there was an older man sitting with this girl I used to talk to and then go home and get my dictionary out and see what she said. She was so smart, because I didn't understand most of the three-syllable words she used, and she was brilliant. And it wasn't just her father. It was the editor of the Dodge City Daily Globe, the most powerful newspaper in western Kansas. And on the front page, I got a rave review about the acting job I did, and I couldn't believe it. And within about 2 or 3 weeks, somebody wrote me a letter, and I can't remember from where, it was back east someplace, and said, we're looking for people at this time to come back here who do great acting for, in their colleges, and we just read a review on you. We can't get you here. You had to get here, but we'll pay your board and room, and what we do is do shows for the soldiers being mustered out of the Second World War here. And so we'll do a new play each week, and you get a lot of experience if you can get here. And I thought, whoa, that's exciting.
Yeah.
So I didn't have any money, but somebody said, I've got an old bicycle, an old motorcycle here if you want to use it. You think you could ride that? So I tried, and I said, yeah, I'm riding it. They said, well, you notice that it kind of bumps around. He said, these are the days that we don't have inner tubes for a bicycle because it's all going into the war effort. But what we could try to do is I got an old Model T tube here that's bigger than your a motorcycle, but maybe we can weld it together. It'll be a little rough. You be careful with it because I don't know what'll happen, but that might get you back east if somebody you say somebody let you loan your bicycle, yeah, motorcycle. So that's what happened. They welded me a piece of, and I said, now take a lot of patching with you. Because it's 1,300 miles to where you're going, and we don't know what'll happen. So every 100 miles, the tire blew out. It was on my front, and I was splattered all over the highway. I tried to anticipate when it would blow out, but I had to get back there on time. So finally, I made it back there, and I looked like I'd just come out of the Second World War. I was so battered up and scratched up, and everybody thought I'd been in the service. I said, no. I just came to do some acting. So that's how I got started. And from that, I got excited about bringing Broadway to the Middle West. Well, the Middle West didn't want Broadway, but I didn't know that. I was going to start an acting company, and I did. Moved out to Colorado, and my shows were... I had a director coming out from New York, a very famous young man that most people wouldn't know now, but he was famous on Broadway, and he wanted to get out of New York and go try something. So he wrote me and said, I read about you and heard about you. Could I come and direct for you? And I said, yeah, I don't have a director. And I said, I can give you a board and room. That's all I can do, and maybe a little money, depending if I get enough people coming in to help me teach them what to do in show business, because I can save a lot of people trouble if they know how difficult it is to get in. And if nothing else, I can teach them that. And if there's supposed to be, nothing can stop them. So he came out, but he got there, and all of a sudden he was overwhelmed with the beautiful outdoors. He'd never been outside of New York City, which is pure concrete, you know. And so he left me just before we were supposed to start doing a new play each week for 12 weeks. And I thought, Lord, I'm going to have to direct. So I did, and I'll be doggone, I got rave reviews out of every paper and newspaper out there. I didn't know a thing about directing. So the life has it always working for us when we are willing to risk without being afraid and get in a position where you have to do something, so you might as well go ahead and direct. So I did. So that's how I got started, and eventually television came along and wiped out my companies. And there was a girl who was a great actress in my company who had come there, and she kept intimating that maybe we should get married. And I hadn't even thought about things like that. By that time, I was just immersed in show business, I thought. But I called her one day when my folks were with me on a vacation, just as we had to close. And I called and said, hey, you talked about getting married. You said someday you want 4 children. I said, I don't know anything about children, except I know they're wonderful. And is that guy who's a former minister, or who's a minister, who's a former actor, still giving marriages for $25 to people who have been in show business? She said, yeah. And I said, well, we got $25 plus enough money to get to East Coast or West Coast. I'm going to come back. You want to get married? She said, yeah. So my folks were with me. We went back, and I got married right then. And we flipped the coin, and came up California. Well, when it came up, I said, well, I guess we're supposed to go to California. We did, and we got here. I decided, you know, I'd love to work with the Ritz-Carlton. He's got this show on. And I don't dare go asking, but maybe I can figure out something. In those days, there was just one sponsor. It was Tide Soap on the Red Skelton Show. So I went to the sponsor, and I said, you know, I'm going to be an actor. I'm going to be in comedy someday, and I'd like to go over and work backstage and study Red Skelton, because I think he's the greatest comedian in the country right now. You got any jobs for a guy like me? And they said, no. I said, well, thank you. You saved me a lot of time. I got to go find some kind of work. As I started out the door, I said, how would you like to be a gopher? Well, I lived in Kansas. I knew what a gopher was, and I thought, well, maybe it's an acting job to be a gopher, you know? I said, well, yeah, I could play a part like that. And they said, no, you go for this, you go for that, and you stay backstage, and you're just everybody's servant, and you don't say you can't do it. You just go do it, because everything's live, you know? And we just can't. We got to get everything done right. There's no time to stop the show, you know.
Sure.
So I got that thing, and after about 3 months, I told everybody I wanted to be an actor and someday. And I used to sit down with Red a lot and watch him, because he couldn't stop when the shows were over. The first 3 months there, he got so tensed up from trying to do a good job that he wanted somebody to sit down and just watch him. And he'd take off his shoes and he'd try out all of his jokes with his feet up on the desk and his toes talking to each other as he tried the jokes out. And I screamed when it was funny, because it was honestly funny. And he put a lot of those things in the show. So one day, a guy didn't show up who was real short. And they came to me and said, listen, you're just the right size to get inside this Eskimo outfit here. This snowman's outfit, because we can't, the actor didn't show, and we got to have him here. So Red was, in that time, was not trusting everybody else. He'd been so long in burlesque that he knew all the jokes there, and he was afraid the writers wouldn't be funny. So what he did, came over to me and while I was in the snowman's outfit, and he said, you say this, I'll say this, you say this, I'll say this, you say, give me three lines. And he didn't know I was in the snowman's outfit. So we did the show. And people screamed at what he gave me to say with laughter. And when it was over, he said, take off your head. And I pulled off my head. He said, what are you doing in there? I never did tell him my name, because I had sent him my only announcement that I was getting married. I sent to Red Skelton, because I didn't have any other quarter to send it to anybody. So he said, what's your name? I said, Buddy Piper. He said, hello, the audience. And he says, where's your bride? Because I had sent him that thing saying I'm getting married. And I said, she's out in the audience. He said, there's a woman out in the audience who's an actress, and she's married to this young man here. And every time I use a bride on the show, she will play the part. And that's all he said. And they said, good night, he said. They left. And so that was my contact, and I was on his show for 3 years. And then one day he came to me and he said, you know, you do a funny show for children, and I have a contact in New York who owes me a favor. Would you like to move your whole family? By that time we had four kids all together, and when the time came, I've been with him that long. So I said, yeah, we'll go. We went, and just as soon as we got to New York, Walt Disney brought in the Mickey Mouse Club and got my time slot. So here we were, stranded in New York, too tired to go back, and had to make a living. 6 months after that, I got a call from the guy who Red had sent me to, and he said, hey, he said, you got a wild mind. Did you ever create a game show? And I didn't want to lie, but I thought, well, gosh, I only had 3 weeks left of unemployment at $38.50 a week to feed all six of us, and I know I was in deep trouble. I said, well, I could. Yes, I can create a game show. They said, we got to have one right away, NBC. We got two hot game shows on the air, and NBC just called us and said they want another, and they got a time slot open. How soon could you bring one in? I said, how about tomorrow morning? I had no idea what I was going to say, but I had to get some money right away or not spend any time talking to somebody. Wouldn't give me any money. So he said, what time will you be here? I said, 9:30. He said, okay, we'll be here. Well, I knew in those days that women never worked in the game shows as creators, because women have always been put down in everything in life, and I never did like that, because I had a sister and I thought she was marvelous. And so anyway, I knew that I said to myself when I was going to create a game, I said, what do men like? And then I think, well, of course they like women. So I think of something that everybody in the office there, including the kids who work free practically, so they could be taught how to be producers and were creating game shows, as well as the boss. And I was hoping the boss would guess what I was going to create. And I drew a picture of a woman's leg bare, halfway between the knee and her hip, all the way down the end of her toes. And I put a bandage on her knee, drew a picture of a man's leg, and I knew nobody cared how the man's leg looked. And I just scratched on it and said, that's a man's leg. And I put a bandage on his toe. I said, I want to tell you all something before I tell you what I drew these two pictures for. I said, you do not have two television game shows on the air. Whoa, they cussed me out. They got upset with me and said, what are you talking about? You don't know anything about it. And you just, you know, I said, you have two radio game shows. You just ask questions. I'm part Cherokee Indian, and we see in pictures. So I'm going to give you all a chance to guess first and see who gets the answer here. You should go to pictures and in some form on your game. And they said, oh, and I said, now I'm ready to tell you what the pictures are. Are you all ready? I was hoping the guy that had the money, the owner of the company, would beat everybody, but because he had the money and could get me a job. And within 9 seconds after I showed him the picture of the woman with the bandage on her knee and the man with the bandage on his toe, I said, who is this? And in 9 seconds he says, why, that's Tony. I said, you're exactly right. He says, I love it. He says, I'll give your kids, you said they're hungry, I'll give you $5,000 to feed your kids. I'll give you 10% profits if we ever sell this. It's got to have something else with it. I said, I know you do, but this is part of this is visual. And that's all I have to contribute. You know, I get somebody else to contribute the rest. And he said, I'll also give you merchandising. I said, what's that? He said, well, if kids happen to like this show, why, we'll sell this game and people can play it at home, but it has to be on the air a few months before we know if the people like this and the kids like it. So he said, so finally we got on the air. 3 months later, he came in and handed me a check. He says, I thought you'd be interested in knowing what your merchandising is. You're getting a pretty good salary anyway, aren't you? I said, I'm getting a heavenly salary. And he says, but this is more. He says, look at your check. We're only 3 months into the time that's been on the air, and the check was for $40,000 at a penny. I only got a penny for each game, and they'd sold 4 million games in 3 months. So that's the kind of money that came in. I made $2 million in that one night, and through the years I was blessed. But then I discovered that this information that we're talking about now, what life's really about, and that was really intriguing to me. So I'm going to stop now and see if you want to ask any more questions or if I give you a chance to talk.
That's really, really interesting. But yeah, you know, I would like to steer the show a little bit more towards the paranormal a little bit.
Yeah, well, okay, anything you want to talk about, maybe I know something about.
Yeah, like, you know, the Space Brothers and yes. I think about all of that, the whole UFO.
Well, they're real. They're real. They are our deepest friends right now. And if anybody has a pen now, I can give you what I'm telling this answer. If you'd write down this thing, I have a film on, which I didn't even know I had. Somebody taped me about 6 or 8 years ago. I did a big talk up in Santa Barbara, California, with a guy, and he taped it, filmed it. I didn't know that. That's okay with me, because I just said, go ahead and film it. But somebody showed me on a computer. I don't run a computer, because I got up there and never come down. When the computer was invented, I said, finally, everybody on the planet has a voice. But I'm so curious, I don't dare get up there. With my curiosity, I never come down. I just keep on looking, you know. So I never run a computer. But what happened, trying to tell you, take me back to what I was talking about, okay?
The Space Brothers and UFOs. And...
Oh, that's, yeah. What happened was I found out that all the planets have people on them, but we can't see them because we're not highly developed enough here on the planet, this planet. But they are helping us all the time, trying to. And we don't have to believe any of that. But the information I got was we're looking for a group of people to tell the world about this who don't mind being rejected. If you have a lot of pride and you think you're so smart, don't do it. But if you don't, if you got courage and you think there should be something more important on the planet than some of the things we do, well, then maybe you'd be one of the people that should be telling this story. So I thought, well, yeah, maybe I would be. So I gave up show business, and I started working with a small group of people, and I got on over 1,000 talk shows, and I traveled to 100 cities, sleeping many times in my car, and other times I had a little bit of money to get to the place where people had booked me in to talk. And so that's what I've been doing ever since. And as a result, I found out that we will eventually, here's a number to put down if somebody has a pen who's listening. One, if you want to get on a free mailing list, here's a number to call. It's toll free. 1-888-242-8272. 1-888-242-8272. And maybe somebody there will remember after I'm gone, in case you didn't get that written down. But if you listen to a lady, a very charming lady with a pleasant voice, she'll talk to you about 45 seconds. It's on a tape. And she will tell you several things that will be fascinating to you. And then she will say something. And what you do is, she said, how did you hear about us? And what you do is just say, Buddy Piper said you'd put me on a free mailing list about the future, which is about the most important change in human history, starting with the worldwide stock market crash, because that's what we have to break the rich folks from stealing from the poor, because two-thirds of the world goes to bed hungry every night, and they know how to share, and life is about sharing. We are all one. We're pure love. Once we understand that if there's one person in trouble on the planet tonight, we all have work to do, and nobody should ever go without food, shelter, health care, and education, because we have a 10% surplus of everything.
All right. Well, what do you think about this whole economic situation? Is it going to change? Are we going to be able to make
yes,
more people?
Yes, it's going to change. And within, let me tell you one thing about, did I tell you about the star up above that I started to, I think. Maybe I didn't. There's a star out here in L.A. where I live, and you pay, people may live near some place too like that. I don't know. But there's a star every night I see up above. And if anybody remembers the story about this little baby that was going to be born back there, if you're around religion, you probably have heard something about this star. There were three wise men that came to see a baby born, and they were guided by a star. Well, this is the same person manifesting the star that was announcing there was a baby going to be born. The baby happened to be named Jesus, and Jesus grew up and didn't do exactly what people think he did, because we're not aware of really what it was about. The star was to announce the fact that there were, and the three wise men were three people from different planets who were here because they knew this baby was going to be an example for the entire world until we got the idea that all of us are divine. All we have to do is understand that we live forever. We cannot see people on the other side right now yet because we're not highly developed enough, which we have to do ourselves and will. And within a year or two right now, you'll see this teacher. Actually, he'll be talking on television. He won't call himself Maitreya or the world teacher. But he'll be so brilliant that people say, my goodness, have you heard this man talking when he talks? And he'll talk and talk until finally And the 51% of the people say, oh, we ought to see more about this fella. And at that time, he's free to come out in the open, and then he'll talk to the entire world at once. He'll talk to them for 25 minutes. He says, I want you to know you have nothing to fear, because I'm here for the next 2,300 years, and when I leave here, all of you will be so highly advanced that you can't believe it. You'll be seeing people on the other side, on different planets and stuff as time goes by, and you've got a great future. So I don't want you to be afraid, but I will tell you this. You have 10 years left, approximately, of air you can breathe and water you can drink, because the people who kept wanting to make, now they're frowning about the fact that they might have to pay some of their money if they make over $250,000 a year so that everybody can have some health care. But he says those people are not very highly advanced, and that's why we don't have health care. Everybody should be guaranteed food, shelter, health care, and education as a human right, so you never have to be afraid of being alive. As a matter of fact, you won't be alive long if you don't get it. But he said, I'll take care of the pollution business when I get here. I'll tell you right off before I go any further, some of you are afraid of a third world war. He says, because I'm here, there will never be a third world war, so don't be afraid. I'll take care of that. I'll take care of the fact that everybody should have food, shelter, health care, and education. But the rest of the time, anybody who wants to really grow rapidly and be very useful, you must understand that the future will be ruled by the people who go to bed hungry tonight. That's two-thirds of the world, and they know how to share. Many of them die before they're 30 years old, but they save their bites, and if there's a person sitting next to them who's hungry, they'll take one bite and die, and they'll give the other bite to the other person who will die, and that's a terrible situation that's going on right now, but they know how to share, and they will be in charge of the political systems on the planet in the future. Any politician in the future who will not share will be thrown out of office by these people, voted out of office. And I've got some stuff just before we hang up. You let me know, and I'll read you three or four paragraphs of exactly what will happen. And that was something that I want to leave with you, if I may. But that's a long-winded answer to what do you think is going to happen. What's going to happen is we're going to have an opportunity to recognize that we're all divine. Divine is called sharing. And there's no reason in the world that everybody shouldn't have health care. And we will have it in some form. I can tell you this, Barack Obama will be the last president we have. Whether he knows it or not, he's being used as an example. He has about 25 people, brilliant people, and Republicans and Democrats he works with. He doesn't even know that he's being used to show the world how eventually we will have all our politics. And it will never be just the two people like we had the last 8 years deciding what we do, which got us $15 trillion in debt, which our children had to pay for. That's why young people are so anxious right now. That's why they voted for a young man that says there's a place for you people too when you're very young and you don't want to stay living at home because you're so broke, and that has to be changed. So that's some of the stuff going on.
Well, then we're in for some major changes then, it sounds all good, though.
Yeah, the changes are magnificent, because if you care about everybody, including yourself, and we don't have to be perfect, that's one of the things we'll find out, that we eventually learn how to be perfect, but we're not judged. We just have to know that we have the ability to love and to share. We have one of the reasons some religions don't let women be honored, and they also try to change our elections by telling us don't ever have birth control. So we have twice as many people on the planet are supposed to be here. That's why we're having such difficulty, because an awful lot of people are born and can't be fed, and that all has to change. So we're going to be all right forever if we just learn how to share.
Yeah, well, hopefully that day will not be too long in coming.
It won't be too long. Just keep watching for it and keep watching the stars. San Fernando Valley, maybe I've already said this, San Fernando Valley, because of its amazing size, is called the fifth largest population in the United States is the San Fernando Valley. And that's how many people live here. And these people are very important. So there's the star you see, there are four of them around the world. And at night, if you see this one star, then keep searching for this one that every once in a while it appears, and it sounds like a truck is pulling across the sky, so we don't think it's a star. But it's a star. These stars are actually pieces of planets that are helping us understand, and they have to be put aside over where the sun hits them to charge up again so they light up. And we have so much a major population here that some of these people, like the Mars and Venus and another planet, I can't remember what it is, the two other planets are working with us. But you see that there's so much population around this area that you hear one of those being pulled over sometime, and then it stops. And if you watch it for the next 2 or 3 hours, it won't move. And you won't hear any truck or anything pulling it or whatever it is. I don't know what's making the thing, but I see it quite often. So I'm just telling you, if you live anywhere near L.A., you keep watching the stars when it's real clear up there, especially when the moon starts getting big. It's full moon recently, and I've seen that star beautifully the last few nights, although I go out every night and see it. But you can't see it every place, and now I know what that other star is. It's just being put over there. It's been resting someplace where the sun lights it up, because it's part of the planet. I don't know how to explain it further now. I'm not smart enough, but you will hear about it.
No, it's interesting. But we are beginning to run out of time, and I want to give you a chance to read what you said you wanted to read.
Okay, yeah, if you're out of time, what I'll do is it'll just be about a couple, 3 minutes here to give you a picture of something, okay?
Yeah, this is what, perfect.
All right, this is what this person wrote. It said, tell everybody you can this information. He says, look for a modern man concerned with modern problems, political, economic, and social. Since July 1977, this person has been emerging as a spokesman for a group of our community in a well-known modern country. Well, that's in England, London. He is not a religious leader, but an educator in the broadest sense of the word, pointing the way out of our present crisis. You will recognize him by his extraordinary spiritual potency, the universality of his viewpoint and his love for all humanity. He comes not to judge, but to aid and inspire. Throughout history, humanity's evolution has been guided by a group of enlightened men, the masters of wisdom. They remain largely in the remote desert and mountain places of earth, working mainly through the disciples who are openly in the world. The message of this person's appearance has been given primarily by such a disciple trained for his task for over 20 years. Teacher Maitreya. At the center of this spiritual hierarchy stands the world teacher. Goes on, I'm trying to cut this out. The presence of the world in the world now guarantees there will not be a third world war. I'm moving it down because I get down here. My task will be to show you how to live together peacefully as brothers and sisters. This is simpler than you imagine, my friends, for it requires only the acceptance of sharing. And we're going down here. It says, when will we see this person? He's not as yet declared his true status, and his location is known only to a very few disciples. One of these has announced that soon this person will acknowledge his identity, and within the next year maximum, and possibly sooner, you'll start hearing him talk, even if he doesn't give his real name, on television in the United States, starting here. And we'll speak to humanity through a worldwide television and radio broadcast. His message will be heard inwardly, telepathically, by all the people in their own language. From that time, with his help, we will build a new world. Without sharing, there can be no justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Without peace, there can be no future. Here's the last two sentences. Maitreya's message can be summarized in a few words. Share and save the world. That's about all I know.
Amazing stuff. Well, you have a really amazing life experiences and a lot of very interesting information to share. So I want to thank you so much for coming on the show, buddy. It's been amazing.
Well, it's been amazing and a great privilege, and I want to thank you. I did tell you how to reach that thing about the film I made, didn't I? All you do is dial in Buddy Piper, BUDDYPIPER, on Google. I don't know what that means exactly. And then it takes you to YouTube, and I have an hour film on there that tells you all about the future. You watch it once, it'll calm you down about the future. Send people to it because they'll be grateful, because they'll know more than 95% of the people on the planet what's going to happen, okay?
All right. So all you have to do is Google your name and go to YouTube. All right.
Yeah, Buddy Piper, Google, YouTube, and it's an hour film. You don't have to watch all of it, but if you do, you will know more than 95% of the people what's going to happen.
Awesome.
Take care of each other.
Thank you very much, buddy.
Keep up your good work, okay?
Thank you. You too.
I do the best I can. I try to stay alive on my Social Security. I've spent my $2 million from the show doing something more important. Thanks a lot. Take care.
Thank you. You too. Well, everyone, that is our show for tonight. I want to thank you all for listening. You've been listening to UFOs and the Paranormal. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and the show guest tonight has been Buddy Piper. Very interesting man and has had a lot of very interesting experiences and a lot of very interesting information to share. And if you want to learn more about what he's all about, check him out. Just Google his name, Buddy Piper, on the World Wide Web. And go to YouTube, and he's got an hour-long lecture there, which will give you all sorts of very interesting information, the kind of stuff we've been talking about tonight. So I want to thank you all for listening. I hope you've enjoyed the show as much as I have, and I hope you can join us next week at this same time on the BDS Network. Until then, have a wonderful evening and a great week. Bye now.